And welcome into the Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar. Joe Rexrong will be along shortly. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We got a whole lot going on the program today. The college football playoff semifinal last night. We've seen one team punch their ticket. And we've got another matchup to get into tonight, and we will take your thoughts on all that. The head coaching search still underway for the Tennessee Titans. More names trickling out there as to who will be interviewed and some potential targets for the Titans. And we will have TD with us to help us talk about that a little bit later in the show as well. So looking forward to Teron Davenport being with us on the program. Ian Safar, how are we doing? What's going on?
Good morning. Doing good. Little rainy out there, so heads up on the way in. Little tired. I made it through the whole game. I stayed up.
Look at you.
Good game, obviously, but doing great. Happy Friday, everybody.
Hope everybody is doing well. Again, Miami punching their ticket last night, 31-27, the final score. So Miami and Carson Beck taking down Ole Miss. They punched their ticket to the national championship game. Joe Rexrode, are you with us? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I mean, I got people stealing cords of mine, so I'm going to sound like I'm inside a toilet right now, probably, for one thing. So, sorry about that. The stealing of cords that I have to use for this is a real problem.
Real problematic.
Yeah. So next break, I'll see if I can, rustle up a way to not sound like a frog in a toilet.
You sound okay. It's not that bad. Yeah. Your thoughts on Miami's big win last night. What a story for Carson Beck going from Georgia, transferring to Miami. Some concern from the Miami standpoint of whether or not they were going to get in the college football playoff the last couple of weeks of the season. They do. And, Joe, now they find themselves in the national championship game on the other side. What a story for Ole Miss getting through the playoff without Lane Kiffin. But that run comes to an end last night.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are rooting for Ole Miss just because of the Lane Kiffin thing. And it's a pretty cool story. I like how Pete Golding has handled it. They probably should have lost that game by 10 to 14 points. Miami really physically better them. And then Miami did a lot of things to screw it up and make sure that it was still a close game. And look, Ole Miss did too. Trinidad Chambliss, it kind of stinks to think that boom, snap of the finger, he leads that drive. And then it's like, yeah, that might be the last play he plays in college football unless he wins his case to get another year, in which case he will play for Ole Miss, which that'd be, I mean, I don't know if he'll win it. I don't know if he should win it. It'd be fun to see him win it.
It would. But
in the meantime, great story for Carson Beck. You got to be impressed with him. After, yes, he won championships with Georgia as a backup, but obviously he took a lot of blame. He got hurt. He was top of the draft guy, and then all of a sudden it's like, is he draftable? That's an interesting part of this is, how much did he help himself in that way? But yeah. I just thought he was fearless. And again, Miami should have won that game going away, right? They were, I think, clearly the better team. So it's like you said, it's a team that we weren't sure was going to get in. We're sitting there every week. It's like, well, they're not quite close enough to Notre Dame to be compared to Notre Dame. And they very nearly did not make this field and here they are. So, I'll go back to the beginning, and I'm not necessarily changing my answer, but I remember, when you were talking about the group of five teams and, the teams that didn't get in, I don't think Vanderbilt was going to get this far. Maybe Notre Dame could have, maybe. But I think we also look at Miami and go back to the beginning of the year. I don't know what the heck happened to them against, Louisville. I mean, I don't know what happened in the middle of the season to Miami. Yep. But they're one of the best teams. Like, this is not a fluky team being in the national title game,
No, they're incredibly talented.
Yeah. And Cristobal has taken a lot of crap. And Oregon fans will tell you, they couldn't wait for him to leave with game management stuff and things like that. But I mean, guy can coach a little bit, it seems like.
Well, and look, the Malachi Tony kid who's 18 years old, who is, just another 5 for 81 last night and another touchdown, and a bunch of their offense runs through him, both down the field and at the line of scrimmage. I mean, there's so many different ways they can get him the ball. And, they were talking about this on the broadcast last night, just how impactful he's been so early. Pretty incredible to watch what he's done. And you look at him, you're like, well, he's not the biggest guy. He took that absolute shot early in the game last night on the targeting call. And I was like, well, he may be done the rest of the night. Of course, like 2 plays later, he hops right back out there and is ready to go. But that kid's really good.
He's special. It's crazy how many of these freshman receivers we've seen. Obviously, last year you had the combo of Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, Ohio State, Alabama. But now to think about him for 2 more years of college football, he is something else. And down the field. And Ole Miss screwed up one. I don't know why you ever, as a safety, worry about the tight end when he's out there running a post. I
Yeah.
mean, that's just. But then to get that tunnel screen too, I mean, he broke a couple tackles last night. That it's like, how is a freshman doing that to you? To a linebacker, or a safety, or whatever. But no, he's something else. So now they get to play for the whole thing in Miami.
Yeah. It's amazing how that part of it works out. Joe, yet another year where the SEC is out before the national championship game even arrives. You'll have Indiana and Oregon coming up, and the winner of that's going to take on Miami. So another year where the SEC is not going to be in the national championship game, coming off a bowl season that frankly did not go very well for the SEC. And I know, college football playoff, they did have one matchup against each other, so you have to keep that in mind. But the playoff didn't go overly well, other than Ole Miss's run that they made to the semifinal here. So what do you make of that with the third year in a row that the SEC didn't even get into the title game?
Yeah, well, look, I think that I don't know if I'm. I guess it depends on how you look at it. Like, the Big Ten is going to play for the title 3 years in a row. The SEC is not going to play for the title 3 years in a row. The Big Ten might win it 3 years in a row. It doesn't mean nothing. Again, I think you said it before. It's like, the SEC is loud and out front when the numbers are in their favor, so you can't now just dismiss them. We know bowl games are have a they have a limited meaning, but I don't dismiss this as nothing. The super team is just really hard to have anymore. The Georgias and Bamas of not long ago that just straight up had like full second units that could beat most other teams, right? Like, though, that just doesn't exist. They're gonna go somewhere else and play and get their and get. Okay, I'm back up here, getting a pittance on top of my scholarship. I mean, whatever that would be, but it's not that much. I mean, you when you're a starter in Power Five, then all of a sudden you're talking about six figures and then up and up, and obviously into the millions when you're a star or when you're a quarterback. So you're going to, the kids are going elsewhere where they can play faster. Maybe it's not always in the best interest of them, but that's just, I don't see it changing. And I just don't see teams being able to stockpile the way that they used to. So that's part of it. I also think some of this is just, it can be circumstantial. It can be a quarterback. It can be, it's a close game here or there that goes against you. But certainly, the clear dominance is gone. I still think there's more programs in the SEC that have all of the ingredients to win than there are in the Big Ten or any other league. I understand like Iowa beat Vandy and stuff, and there's been a lot of written about that. Like, I thought the mid-level was way better. That's where you got to be careful with the bowl results. I still think there's more good programs in the SEC, but yeah, the dominant era is gone, and I just think that we'll have an SEC champion soon enough, I'm sure. But I don't know that we're going to be looking at any league winning 7 in a row or whatever it was like the SEC did, back in the day. So it's kind of just spread out. But hey, people are going to have their fun at the expense of the SEC right now. So you're going to have to just grin and bear it, Greg Sankey.
Yeah, it's
And
going to be a
you know
fun
what?
offseason. Fun
Hey.
offseason for Greg Sankey. I'm sure he'll love all that. By the way, I mean, as George from Murfreesboro on the YouTube chat points out, Joe, what does it all mean? Cam and Restrepo leave Miami, and now they're in the national title game. How do you handle that if you're a Titans fan?
Wow, oh, that's that is interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. It's crazy because I was sitting there last night, and it's like we didn't even talk about this. It's like Cam Ward versus Jackson Dart. You know, they were
Yeah.
on the opposing sidelines last night. So I guess Cam's team still won though, right?
He did. He
So
did.
there's that.
We're off and running on Robbie and Rex Road today, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Take more of your thoughts on the game from last night. We'll look ahead to Indiana and Oregon. We'll give you the latest on the Vols' pursuit for a high-level quarterback. All that coming up, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game.
Fernando, coming off of the biggest win in program history, what have you seen from your team this week?
I see my team still stay humble and hungry. We understand that the Rose Bowl is a great win against a great SEC opponent. However, the job's not finished. We have Oregon, who we played in week five. We had a great upset against them. However, if anything, they're super hungry. They're feeling like the underdog. And so we need to make sure that we maintain that underdog mentality and be able to play with execution and poise against the Ducks on Friday.
That's Fernando Mendoza looking ahead to the game against the Ducks. By the way, the Game National Sports Network, your home for the college football playoff tonight at 6:30 on 102.5 The Game. It is number 5 Oregon taking on number 1 Indiana in the Peach Bowl. College football playoff coverage on 102.5 The Game presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Joe, I can listen to Fernando Mendoza talk, I believe, all day. Looking forward to the matchup tonight. What do you think of this matchup that we have seen already this year? Indiana went on the road and took down Oregon. Indiana, obviously, is playing as well or better than anybody in the nation right now. They just absolutely destroyed Alabama. And yet there's Oregon, who, always finds themselves in the mix. They haven't been able to break down the door with all these teams and win the national championship. And here they are on the doorstep again of punching their ticket to the title game. What do you make of this one tonight?
I am so very excited for this football game, just like Fernando is excited as front of this football game. Sorry. Yeah, I was trying to impersonate Fernando Mendoza and
It's
I
hard to do.
stumbled. I know, I stumbled over my words. Hope I sound better out there though, too, folks. I hope that at least there's like that sweet milky voice now coming through now that I found my chords that got stolen from me. This is the main event. I mean, last night I was excited about that game, and I mean it's gonna be hard for tonight's game too, I think. Match last night's game for drama. And by the way, we never talked about like they should have called PI on the last play. They almost never do in a Hail Mary-ish type play, but I got in a debate about this with Scott Docterman on our Slack channel last night, but I'm like, he's like, well, it wasn't catchable. I'm like, but it wasn't catchable because he dragged him down. Let's see the I need the sports science show to like, you know, make the, like show the trajectory if it's if his body isn't yanked back in tandem with the ball. I think he could have got a foot in, but anyway, there's a lot of PI stuff going on last night, just like Miami's used to with the Fiesta Bowl. With this one, you know, I said yesterday, I think whoever wins this game is going to win it all. I don't know if I necessarily even believe that anymore because Miami is good. Really, really good, and they are awfully battle tested. But I do think this is going to be a great game, and I think Oregon has a real chance. I do. I know what Indiana just did to Alabama, and no one should take anything away from Indiana ever again, right? But Alabama also, like, I mean, they kind of did fade down the stretch, and I was awfully impressed with what Oregon did against Texas Tech. Because they played, I still think, the best defense out there and, you know, had their struggles with the defense, but their defense was excellent and they eventually broke through. And you know, I do believe in the whole thing about it's hard to beat a team twice.
Yeah, I mean,
It happens.
Indiana feels so much like a machine. Like it's just, I've seen a bunch of Kurt Cignetti stuff this week and his approach and all these things, and they have been able to answer the bell every time. Oregon, it's a really fascinating quarterback matchup because you got Dante Moore, Fernando Mendoza. I mean, you could potentially be talking about, top two picks in the draft. when it comes to that. I'm really interested to see how Oregon's defense stacks up against that offense. I mean, Oregon's defense looked great last time we saw them, right? How much of that was them? How much of that was Texas Tech and just the quarterback absolutely not being able to do anything out there? I don't know. We're going to find out, I think, tonight. But, I mean, Indiana, they just absolutely punked Alabama. And I realize that the Alabama team that we have seen the last couple of years is not Nick Saban's Alabama team. I understand that. We've talked about that, of like the mystique around Alabama is gone. Having said that, like, you still don't see them just get absolutely destroyed the way that they did last time out against Indiana. So, right. I mean, at this point, Joe, it's hard for me to believe that somebody's going to beat Indiana until I see them do it. And that's still an incredibly insane sentence for me to utter when it comes to the college football part of this. But after having watched them do what they did to Ohio State, and look, maybe Ohio State wasn't as good as maybe we thought heading into all this, after watching them steamroll Alabama, I just, my expectation is tonight, I mean, I think Oregon will hang in there. I think it'll be a good game. And I think Indiana probably pull away late and win. I mean, that's just my expectation heading into this.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting because we haven't figured out what we're going to do for Picks and Pick'em, but I'm sure this one will be part of it. But,
oh, yeah.
I don't know why I would have any misgivings about Indiana continuing to win and just winning the whole thing after the way they played last time out and the way they played all year. I just, for some reason, I feel like Oregon has a real chance here. This is also interesting, of course, because it's likely, I guess, the top two quarterbacks. I mean, I guess that's the way things are shaking out in analyst world right now.
Yep.
Is you're seeing a lot of mock drafts with one or the other as number one overall pick and one or the other as number two overall pick, which to me is just like, that's a big red flag for the quarterback year in the draft. But, you know, that's how it goes. So if Dante Moore is great tonight and his team beats Fernando Mendoza, does he win the number one overall pick?
I don't know.
I mean, he's really good and he has the potential to be a really good player, but man, it's hard for me to think that he's a number one or number two pick in the draft already, but that's just how things go.
So we'll see on that front tonight what happens. Speaking of quarterbacks, what do you make of the Sam Leavitt situation at Tennessee? You think Austin Price put it out there yesterday that he was extending his stay with the Vols. So another day added to it with Sam Leavitt. Obviously, I mean, you start looking around the rest of the portal right now, Joe, and there just aren't a whole lot of quarterbacks left, particularly at the starting level, that are going to make something happen. So, I mean, at this point, to me, it kind of feels like it's going to be Sam Leavitt, or I don't know what the next step is for Tennessee. What do you make of the latest info we have on Tennessee and a potential signing of Sam Leavitt to be their quarterback next year?
Well, as Adam Sparks, you know, talked about yesterday, obviously Oregon is the team to be worried about.
Yeah.
With if Moore leaves, Leavitt's from Oregon, is that his perfect scenario? Does he prefer that offense to Tennessee's? I mean, some of that is just stuff that we don't know, and that could be big factors. But then another factor here is now apparently Damon Williams is going back to Washington.
Yeah.
So whatever the heck happened there, including like what he and his agent parted ways, but then apparently Cordell Landers was involved in some way, and this is the guy who was involved in the Nico move from Tennessee, or the Nico departure from Tennessee, although Cordell Landers went on the internet and called people names and said he wasn't involved. But regardless, all that crap happened, and Damon Williams going back to Washington. So now you, I guess, put Lane Kiffin back in the discussion, although I think it's hilarious to think of Lane Kiffin be like, Sam, hey, man. Yeah, no. I mean, we were big on you the whole time. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, Leavitt was with him at a basketball game. All this stuff broke, and it was basically like, oh, okay, so LSU's getting Damon Williams, and so now they're not. Does Sam Leavitt give them the time of day still?
I don't know.
I don't know. Lane Kiffin has, mysterious powers of persuasion That's for sure. So, is it three teams for him? I mean, he's gone and visited other teams too. To me, it would be, I mean, to me, it's the difference between playoffs and not. I know that that's probably a little hot takey to just make it simplify it that much, but I think Sam Leavitt would be great at Tennessee, and I would really, the ceiling on next year's team would go up pretty significantly if they could get him. But I think we're gonna have to know pretty soon, just like with Ty Simpson this week, right? We're gonna know soon, and we did. He went to the NFL. I have to think this is awfully fast in terms of if he doesn't sign with the Vols, then I assume he's just waiting for Oregon.
Yeah, I would think so. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More your thoughts on the college football playoff, on Sam Leavitt's potential interest at Tennessee. We'll continue the discussion on college football coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Here's what I tell people, and I've reminded myself of this every year. Tennessee is usually the most inactive team in the portal each of the past 3 or 4 years. Under Josh Heupel, a lot of teams get 20 to 30 guys. Josh Heupel usually gets like 8 to 10. And so I think they hope to get a little more than that this year. But that means they're going to get fewer guys on the front end, and they may get fewer guys in the back end. They're just not going to pull in as many guys as others do. And that's a roster building philosophy of Josh Heupel. He wants to lean a lot on high school kids still and developing them and seeing who pans out and then just cutting loose the ones that don't. That's another reason why you see, you know, a number of guys that are like second year guys that are hopping in the portal. And you thought, I never even saw him play much. Well, that's why. Not saying that's right or wrong, but that's what's going on a lot with the roster.
As Adam Sparks on the show yesterday from the Knoxville News Sentinel discussing the philosophy from Tennessee in the transfer portal. It's going to be interesting. Like, that has been the case. There is no doubt about it. Tennessee has not been overly active in the portal under Josh Heupel. We've talked about that before. Now, some of the additions that they've made have been impactful, right? Like, if you go back and look at over the last few years, they've made some impactful transfer portal additions. They have not made a ton of transfer portal additions. And one of the things we wondered about heading into this offseason was, would that change? Would they be more aggressive in the portal? Would they change their approach? And they do have some players that are now starting to come in and commit to them. So we'll see what that looks like as the process continues here. But what did you make of that when Sparks threw that out there yesterday? And how do you see that kind of playing out now as we're discussing the Sam Leavitt stuff with Tennessee and just the roster that's currently in flux with the Vols?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a good thing to keep in mind. We've talked quite a few times about how this year needs to be different. I mean, I feel like they've been involved with a lot of people. They haven't still, you know, maybe they haven't gotten as many, obviously, as you'd like. The safety's name eludes me, who they just lost out to NC State, but it seemed like that was a, you know, that's one of those, again, you don't know everything that goes on or even their interest level. Sometimes a name is just, you know, someone because they're more prominent, but maybe they like someone else better. I mean, especially when you have some of the Group 5 kids who end up being really good players. I mean, every year we see it, right? We see players who weren't on other Power 4 teams, so you don't – I mean, who the heck knew who Trey Richardson was
right
a year ago? And he comes in for Vanderbilt and sets the world on fire. And by the way, that's a big loss for Vanderbilt.
Sure is.
Which apparently, I don't know. There was a bunch of stuff on social media with that about the pay and miscommunication or whatever. But it does – I mean, look, it's a little disappointing right now with Tennessee. I know everything's – so focused on the quarterback, and it should be. And that is another one I do want to throw out there is like, I don't know. What about you as a Tennessee fan? Donovan Raiola? Any
No, Dylan Raiola?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Donovan would be a very out of shape center. Yeah. Yeah. Dylan Raiola.
No thanks.
Okay. I mean, I think he's talented. I know the Patrick Mahomes haircut bothers people.
It bothers me.
Well, I mean, you know, these kids aren't all gonna, you know, have nice crew cuts. I mean, but I don't know. It's hard, like with him, Nebraska's just bad, you know, they just can't figure out how to be anything but mid at best. I do think he's talented, but that's still another one of those kind of taking a gamble on someone with talent but hasn't put it all together, as opposed to you do have some good young options. But anyway, the focus is on the quarterback. It is the biggest thing, but the Falls need, I mean, man, they need to get some guys on defense. Jim Knowles, obviously accomplished defensive coordinator. Jim Knowles needs some Jimmies and Joes.
Well, and I think they got a DT from Penn State yesterday, but Jordan Ross hit the portal. I mean, you're looking at where they are at edge rusher right now, Joe. They need some help. Like they need some help at edge rusher. So that's probably everybody's going to focus in on corner and safety, and I understand all that. And I think they brought in a safety as well, but like they need some help at edge rusher right now because, look. Is Jordan Ross some like irreplaceable loss? I don't think so. He's obviously really talented, and I think he came in this year and took a step forward. They've had some guys that are okay, but they're losing Joshua Josephs. Like, it's a position that right now you're looking at how are they going to rush the passer, and if you can't rush the passer, that's going to be a big problem for your defense. So they're still, to me, in need of some pretty drastic help from the transfer portal on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, no question. And Ross is just one of those, it's just like one of those guys who I just assumed, okay, and now he's going to be able to take a step and it's going to be his turn. And you got the new DC in here, and who knows what they could get out of him. I don't know. That one just seems like did they screw something up? Again, he's an example of someone who I'm sure there are other teams out there throwing money at guys like that. Like, you're going to come here, start, be a star, and we're paying you this, and they're only paying you this, you know? I'm just speculating, but that stuff does happen. But like, I just think he was one that I just would have assumed Tennessee would have prioritized retaining, because you got to have some continuity. And again, I think he's a talent. I think we're going to hear from him wherever he ends up. So, but yeah, there are other edge rushers out there. They've got to make some serious noise from here.
They do, and if they don't land Leavitt, you're looking around the rest of the quarterback pool right now, and then it starts to get into that tier of, are you going to be better off rolling the dice with a McIntyre or a Faison Brandon and bringing in maybe a third guy as a safety net, or are you going down the list of some of these quarterbacks that are in the portal? And you're hoping that you could strike lightning twice, like a la Joey Aguilar, like maybe somebody that you don't have a whole lot of expectation for from the outside heading into this, but you feel like fits your system really well. I mean, that's to me, everybody I think would understand. Like if Sam Leavitt commits to you, it's like, okay, you're feeling pretty good about quarterback at that point. If it's not him, then I think you look down the rest of the available options right now, and you're starting to wonder, okay, would they just be better off going into this thing with a competition between the two young guys and having that third quarterback be a reliable veteran that if somebody goes down, you'd be okay putting in a game at that point.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And there is still, by the way, Joey Aguilar, I think pretty soon here we're gonna hear about that. I mean, if
And it would
that,
have to be. Got to be soon.
yeah, I mean, obviously that would be, we were talking not long ago about, well, if you can get a Leavitt, if you can get a Simpson, then sorry, thanks Joey, appreciate it, but obviously, if you could have him back for another year, that'd be great. Lagway is out of there. He just picked where? He just picked a
Baylor.
place. Okay. Lagway just picked Baylor. I tell you, this is sitting in a press box the other night at First Bank Stadium. I will say, the Lamson kid for Montana State, who previously was at Syracuse and Stanford. I mean, just throwing it out there, like, man, I think he has another year, and I would not be surprised at all if some people come after him. Is he a guy who's going to come in and snap your fingers and, oh, he's clearly the best option, he's going to elevate Tennessee? I'm not saying that. It's FCS football, but there's also guys from FCS who, especially come from like the Montana and North Dakota schools every year, who are good, like really good football players. So there's a dark horse I'm throwing out there for you.
Well, and if they get through the end of this and they're either unwilling or unable to land a pretty significant amount of players in the portal, what would that tell you about Heupel and his approach? I mean, you know, I think a lot of fans obviously would look at that and be like, man, I don't know that you get it. I don't know that you quite understand the situation that you're in heading into all this. And look, some of it, this is going to happen in the portal. Sometimes you're going to have the intention to add either at a position or a specific player, and it just ain't going to work out, right? Like they're going to go somewhere else. They're going to get a better offer somewhere else, whatever the case may be. But like if you're Tennessee, one thing you're not going to convince the fan base of, particularly when you start talking about talent fees and the Adidas deal and the AD getting on Twitter, barking back and forth with fan base, talking about the entertainment center, like you're not going to convince this fan base that you need to be outbid by anybody. I can guarantee you that.
Right. Yeah. And I did ask, you know, like Adam yesterday, and you know, he's like, yeah, like the money, you know, money's not the problem. No, now is it? He also, you know, the whole thing with Heupel being maybe moving too slow at times. I mean, that, you know, that seems like maybe fair criticism. When we talk about everything, we don't know about some people who are in the program who are about to, like, you hear about some guys, but then like spring football is where there's always a handful or more, right, of guys you hear about, like, oh, this guy's ready now, right? So there is going to be some of that with Tennessee. Right, there's going to be some guys who, and that's what Heupel wants. So that's the program he wants. So it's not going to be, I think, as drastic as it seems, even if they don't do as well. But they obviously have to do some work in there. And yeah, I don't think it helps that Danny White's. I mean, it's funny. Some of his tweets are funny, and it is also interesting that like somehow this has turned into like the Vols are choosing this entertainment district over talent. Like, I don't think that's true, but it's just something that like the fan, you know, some fans have kind of seized on. I just know they need some more hits here. They need to show that they're serious. And I mean, we know, I mean, Heupel understands the situation. You know, CD with an interesting question on the text line, which you responded to, what's even the point of us recruiting these five-star quarterbacks? And I get that sentiment. I do. Like we've talked about, I think if they were in a different situation this year, like had they gone to the playoff this year, you know, whatever, things had worked out differently, I don't think there'd be necessarily as much urgency to have to get someone who's a little bit better than those guys or a little bit more experience. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there would be anyway. Because I agree, like I agree in general with the idea, like, yeah, you gotta, like, if you're gonna get these guys, like, there, you have to expect some bump somewhere along the way, right? It's just hard to always just go portal for the QB. But at the same time, look at the schools that are in the Final Four right now. You know, they're all transfer quarterbacks.
Yeah,
and it's just the trend is, even though there's different ways to build teams, that's just kind of been. I mean, Will Howard comes out of Kansas and just leads Ohio State to the championship last year. Transfer portal quarterbacks leading a team to a championship this year. It's like, it's kind of become a thing, whether you're more portal overall or more recruiting overall, you know, the portal QB is kind of like a separate category.
It is. And look, clearly Tennessee's trying to get a quarterback, right? I mean, obviously. So, like, if you're McIntyre and Brandon, you see that. Like, I mean, George McIntyre is aware that Sam Leavitt is around right now. So that's the other part of this too.
Exactly. And frankly, it may be as simple as, okay, well, we'll see who they get. You know, if you're him and his camp, okay, we'll see who they get. If it is like a Leavitt or something, then are you ready to move on? I don't know. It also depends on how, like, a McIntyre looks at himself in relation to Brandon, right? And like, is that going to be a hell of a competition? Or is Brandon so good that in year two, there's just no question he's a guy? I know some people think that, but how often are we wrong about five-star quarterbacks? Happens all the time.
All the time. All the time. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get the latest info on the Titans coaching search coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans coaching search at 615-737-1025. Joe, you guys had Charles on the show yesterday. It was interesting to hear his thoughts on the Titans coaching search. And some other names have trickled out since then in connection to the Titans. Joe, we asked Kuharsky about this the other day. And Mike McCarthy, we had not really heard his name in connection with the Titans to this point. And Kuharsky talked about, maybe not having it as solidly as he would like, but how he didn't necessarily think that McCarthy Brinker automatically would lead to an interview for McCarthy. Well, he is going to be interviewed by the Titans. I believe January 17th will be the date. So that is a week from tomorrow. Mike McCarthy apparently going to be interviewed by the Tennessee Titans. Obviously, some other names have shaken free. I mean, Mike McDaniel gets fired yesterday, so he's out there, and we'll get into what that could potentially mean coming up here in just a few minutes as it relates to, more so with him, I would say the offensive coordinator part of it, maybe than the head coach, but we'll see what happens on that front. Jeff Hafley, who is the Packers defensive coordinator that we've talked about, has been linked to the Tennessee Titans as well, and then Robert Saleh. So, Joe, there's like, what are we, 13, 14 names deep at this point on the list of candidates for the Tennessee Titans. Your thoughts on the latest developments and the names connected to the Titans yesterday?
Yeah, I mean the McCarthy thing's strange, because obviously it's like that could have been just a gimme, that you get all ready to go, before you have to go through some of the things you go through to get other people interviews. Then he's it appear it looks like it's a late ad. I mean, obviously it's all happening this week, but then Karski tells us the other day that I guess maybe the Brinker McCarthy relationship wasn't great. I don't know. What exactly did Kaharski say?
Well, it just wasn't, I mean, it wasn't automatic. Like, I think a lot of people just assume that, well, yeah, duh, they work together. So that means that, McCarthy's absolutely going to be of interest out there. And Kuharsky's point, I think, was, look, they work together. I don't think that that necessarily means that they were all that close from a relational standpoint.
Yeah, I guess okay. So maybe I took it too far. Maybe I took it too far because apparently this has turned into some like big like Twitter battle
He
between like
actually texted me. He was like, hey, send me my comments, what I said about McCarthy. People are taking me out of context.
do you have it? I
Yeah,
actually
give
wouldn't
me just
mind
a sec.
hearing it.
Yeah, let me just
I actually
grab it.
because yeah, then it became this big like thing. I don't know. Kaharski and TD and like this Tic Tac Titans dude who somewhat scares me. And, I don't know. I don't know what's happening out there on these mean streets of X,
Okay, I got it.
but
Yeah, I got it.
okay, all right. Yeah, let's hear that real fast. Sorry.
Well, speaking of Mike, let me ask you this because we get asked about Mike McCarthy all the time, and I've not really seen any sort of connection from the Titans to Mike McCarthy at this point. At this point, do you just have to assume that that's not happening here with the Titans?
I have heard that he is not interested, and I have some reason to believe that the Brinker McCarthy relationship is not one that would lead the Titans to hire him, but I don't have that as firmly as I'd like.
Yeah, it
Well,
just seems
we've
like it's
talked
a.
about that. Like, people just made that natural assumption that because they've been in the
Well, if
same
two guys
building,
work together,
right?
then they automatically want
Like
to work
liked each other
together.
and worked
Yeah.
each other,
Yeah, sometimes it's actually quite the
the
opposite.
opposite. Yeah. So, I mean, I know McCarthy. We talked about the Giants job earlier. Everybody's in connection with the Giants job. It's like, yeah, McCarthy. He might get hired to coach the Giants. So,
That's four.
yeah,
And we're
I
giving
mean,
them four
a
coaches.
lot of coaches going to the Giants. Let's head to our phone line.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, so okay, so let me you guys help me because I cannot keep up with all of his freaking tweets. So has he walked back that at all? Walked that back at all, or is that's because that
No.
sounds like there could be a little bit of like a I don't know, not great relationship.
Well, I guess the interesting part to me, and not that it necessarily means anything, but it's like, all these interviews the Titans are conducting are taking place like now, and then his is scheduled for January the 17th. I mean, look, I know the wild card round will be over with at that point, and you're moving on to the divisional round and all those things. But like that, if they were that interested in McCarthy, and he was that interested in them, they've had, you know, weeks and weeks.
Right.
It's not like they needed permission to talk to Mike McCarthy, right? Like, so, yeah. Like, that's the part of it where I look at it and I'm like, yeah, I just don't know how real the interest is from both sides when it comes down to that.
So why bother then?
I don't know.
Why throw them into the mix of 27 interviews you're already doing?
Cast that wide net, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, I do think that if there's not something that can't be overcome, again, if it's just like, whatever, they didn't really have a relationship, that's not all that. I mean, like, the coaches of these teams aren't going to have relationships with every single personnel guy. There's a whole bunch of people in those personnel departments. You know, if it's just that, then okay, whatever, right?
Like, if you believe the Titans, does his relationship with Brinker really matter all that much? Like, if you believe what the Titans are telling you, that Borgonzi's in charge of the 53, like, Borgonzi's the general manager in the traditional sense. Like, I know Brinker's going to be there, but, like, you know, Brinker is doing salary cap stuff, if you believe the stuff that the Titans put out there. So, like, how much does his relationship with Brinker even matter would be my question.
Well, I totally agree. Now, if it's a little more Brinker has misgivings based on what he saw, he's skeptical that McCarthy would be good at this point. Okay, I mean, he certainly could have some insight, right? Even between all the different people who have worked with both guys. That would make more sense to me. But overall, again, say what you will about Mike McCarthy. I know some Titans fans are completely out on the idea. The guy won a lot. He won a lot beyond winning the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers in 2010. He has had a lot of success with quarterback play, with offensive play, and with winning football games in the NFL. To me, if you were to hire a Mike McCarthy, that is a very high floor hire for the Titans. Whereas, obviously, you'd love to find the next young coach who becomes your Mike McDonald, your Liam Cohen, your Ben Johnson, but you tried that the last time, and it's a no brainer interview to me, unless there's something weird.
Oh yeah, he should absolutely be on the list of interviews. And you know what is his interest level? I think a lot of that probably depends on the quarterback. We've talked about that before, but like McCarthy, unlike some of these other guys, like when you're interviewing coordinators that are busy coaching other teams, like if McCarthy has been angling to get back in the game, I would assume he has had some time to do a pretty good amount of research on all these jobs that either could have been open or, in the Titans case, have been open for months at this point. So, like, I would assume he's got a pretty good idea from a quarterback standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, all those things of what he's looking for if he's that serious about getting back in the game.
Right. Certainly on his side of things, he's been able to watch closely and, you know, just like everybody else, he's also watching as, oh, now here comes John Harbaugh, and now here comes Miami open, and like the picture keeps changing. But yeah, obviously you'd love to know what his ranking of these open jobs would be. I do feel like going around the league, there are some people who cover the NFL who think, you know, have the Titans higher on their list than maybe I would expect, you know, relative to some of these other teams. But again, just like Charles said yesterday, it's like this is purely it's each individual and beauty in the eye of the beholder, and pretty much about Cam.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will continue the discussion on the Titans head coaching search, plus another factor in this search that there could be some pretty good options out there for the Titans with. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.